Welcome to the 5 a.m. Master Scrum Show. I am Greg Messer, Scrum Master and Agile Coach. And we are doing a new Thursday night series where we're interviewing people of change that inspire change, go through issues, share with others so that we as change agents can improve ourselves and other people that we coach and mentor and things like that. And today I have Dr. Carla Hooker. She's the CEO and Artistic Director of Carla's Kids for Musical Ministries, right? School of Liturgical Dance. See, I know I was going to get tongue-tied on that, but that's just me. And Carla and I are both in the book, Volume 21 of the Change series, which insights into self-empowerment. So that's how we met. Carla and I met through the book series. And her area, she titles her area, Adversity to Strength, Unveiling Resilience, right?
Right.
And this interview is not the classic interview where we talk about technical stuff. What do you know about business? Though we will touch on some things and ask them for some tips and tricks on things. But it's really to get to know Carla and what she's up to in the world and what maybe we can glean from her journeys through life and what she's doing now. So I want to welcome Carla. How are you doing, Carla? Welcome to the show.
Hello, Greg.
And I know you're an agent of change. You probably didn't think I was going to say that about you, did you?
No, I did not.
That you are now an agent of change. And you're in the Volume 21 series of the book. Tell us a little bit about yourself that's not on your profiles or maybe include some of the stuff that's in the book about yourself.
Okay. Something that's not on my profiles. Well, I have a secret crush on Snoop Dogg. Only my closest friends know. Now you all know. That's one thing.
Okay.
As a child, I was always in my room. My dad called me a hermit because I spent a lot of time in my bedroom alone, and it didn't bother me. It wasn't because I was sad. I wasn't on punishment. I preferred playing and using my imagination in my room a lot. In my room, I went from the Philippines to Taiwan to Japan, you know, Africa. I traveled every continent and pretended like I was actually there, traveling all over the world.
Was that from, I think, did you mention you had encyclopedias or something?
I said encyclopedia, so I'm dating myself, but yeah.
Hey, me too. I did the same thing. I used to go look at different things around the world and places to go. So you're not alone in that. Yes. How did you get to where you are? Like, can you tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got to be doctor and how you got to be in charge of a dance organization and a company?
Sure. Well, I was very active as a child. I was always looking for stuff to do. So my parents enrolled me in the ArtLink Letter Dance Academy. It used to be in Temple Hills, Maryland. It's no longer there, but that's where I got my start. Later, as I grew up, without telling the whole book and people knowing
right.
everything, some things happened with my health and I was unable to continue that training. But back in my mind, I was determined that I was going to still be a ballerina and do what I wanted to do someday. So as time went on and I went off to college, went off to East Carolina. Yeah, go Pirates.
There you go.
I kept telling my friends, I'm going to have my own dance school one day. My dad was like, just look, I'm paying $4,000 a semester, which really is not that much now. But
yeah,
back in the mid 80s, that was a lot of money. And he said, just concentrate on what you're there for, not having your own dance school and all of that. But long story short, I got sick. I had to take a break from school. I was bedridden a year and I didn't want to go back. Now, my mom is an educator.
Mm.
Dad's a cop, or a retired cop now. That didn't fly too well with them. But some kind of way, I got my way and I convinced them that what I wanted to do was okay. Don't ask me how, I don't remember, but I know if I had gone back to school, there would probably be no Carla's Kids and all the children that I've come in contact with over the years. So okay. That's how I got started. I met Arthur Mitchell, who was the founder, some people say co-founder, I say founder of the Dance Theater of Harlem. And he became my mentor. And he awarded me a full scholarship to the Dance Theater of Harlem at a symposium for teachers in the DC area at the John F. Kennedy Center. So it was like a dream come true.
Yeah.
It's Cinderella story. I cried like I had won the Miss America pageant. It was unbelievable. So that's how it got started, from me having that dream and being determined that nobody was going to tell me I couldn't do ballet and I couldn't dance anymore. And I was determined that I was going to. And then I learned as I got a little older, high school and college, okay, maybe I can't be a ballerina and travel the world like I wanted to and be on stage all the time, but I can teach others how to be ballerinas and be male dancers. And that's what I did. And I did it in the heart of Anacostia in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I know. I grew up in the D.C. area, so I kind of know that. You know. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a rough neighborhood. It's good, though. It's great that you did that. From your books, can you share something about your business and how it start when you started it to where you are now? Anything you learned about that?
When I started, I didn't have my own studio space. I was begging the principal at the school where I worked. I was a teacher's aide. And I said, so nobody's in the cafeteria after school. If I make sure we clean up everything and don't leave a mess for the custodians, can I use that as my rehearsal space? And she said, sure. So that's how I got my beginnings. And then I ended up having to meet with the school system when they found out about this program, because my kids were dancing all over and we got pretty popular all over DC. Channel 9 did a documentary on us, and then we were everywhere. We were from pretty much every huge church in DC, Shiloh Baptist, to the Washington Hebrew congregation, back when Rabbi Weinberg, the rabbi there. And just, I mean, we were everywhere. The Capitol Center, now the US Air Arena, but people liked these kids because they were like a miniature version of the Dance Theater of Harlem and Alvin Ailey. And they loved them and they were good. I'm not just saying that because I taught them, but that's how it got started. Did I have any money to start it? No, I was getting money from my parents. And a lot of times to work with the kids and really develop a close relationship with them, they would spend the night with me because I couldn't really always count on the parents getting them to the events on time.
Right.
So I didn't get blackballed in the industry out there and in the DC area. I had them spend the night and then they wrote with me there. I got everybody ready, usually anywhere from 18 kids and up. Piled them in my work van, because I also worked, when I worked for DC Public Schools, I also worked for the Washington Hospital Center. Okay. And I worked for MedStar. So I didn't steal the van. I wasn't using it illegally. I got permission from my supervisor, Pat. She said, just make sure nothing happens to the van. You're safe with the kids. And, just no tickets or anything like that. And that's what I did. That was my little Carla's Kids bus, was really the MedStar van. And I was driving them around in it. We had milk crates on the floor and blankets because there were no seats in there except for a seat in the back.
Right.
It was a cargo van. So that's how I got started. Very humble beginnings.
Well, you got to start somewhere to make your dream come true, right? So,
right.
So that's great. Now, any advice you might have for people looking to achieve even just a fraction of what you achieved and done so far, any advice on stuff like that?
Sure. Believe in yourself. Don't let no stop you. Believe that no is your next opportunity. And when you get a no, just keep going until you get a yes. And that's how I started. I was determined, no matter what somebody told me, that it was going to be successful and I was going to make these kids confident. I was going to make them resilient and I was going to make them great dancers. And I also stressed academics because I didn't want them saying, oh, they're from Anacostia, but they're not the smartest kids, but she's working with them. They can dance though, but they're not that smart. Mm-hmm. No, grades were very important. If I saw your grades dropping and you weren't making at least A's and B's and you were getting some C's in there, then I would bench the kid. And I would do tutorial sessions with them during practice when the others would be warming up. And if I had to work with them on the weekend, I did that too. But you just have to believe in yourself no matter what anybody else says. My dad thought I was losing my mind and absolutely crazy. When he found out that I was not only picking the kids up, he was a little skeptical about that because he was a police officer in that district, in the 7th mm-hmm. district in Southeast, in Anacostia. And back then, you know, being from the DC area, it was a lot going on. I would get out of the car and go to the door in some of these buildings where they would unscrew the light bulbs and it was dark. And there might be drug dealers and drug addicts in there. It probably reeked of urine most of the time in some of the buildings, but I would walk past, say, hey, how you doing? And pick up the kid and bring them on in. And when I would drop them back off, my dad was like, just drop them off, you know, blow the horn, let the parent come out. And I said, no, I picked them up from their door, I'll take them back in. So he was like, you're gonna kill yourself or get killed out there. You're crazy. Stop doing that. You are not invincible. And I told him, and I still remember this, and he's apologized since then. My dad's 81. I told him, if I died doing this, then at least it was doing something that I loved. And my labor and my life wouldn't be in vain. And he was like, this kid's wacky. Really, because he was a cop and didn't really want to go in.
But they always support, if you read, listen, when someone gets a chance to read your story and all, they were supportive the whole way. I mean, they were that. But I thought one of the things was interesting, and I see this a lot today, people don't start unless everything's perfect. You ever notice that nowadays? Like, if I don't have $1 million income coming in, or, you know, all these people buying shares or donating money, and I have all this cash, I can't start. But you started, like, borrowing gym space, borrowing a medical van.
Right.
To get people around. You didn't have everything. And I think people nowadays, they kind of lose that mentality sometimes. But real entrepreneurs, they go like, no, this is my dream. I'm going to make it happen. Even if I have to start out and I'm not driving a Maserati or something like that. You know what I mean?
I didn't even have a car then. But, and I charged a dollar a lesson.
There you go.
Yeah, that was my salary. A dollar a lesson per kid. And I started off with 18 kids. So. Do the math.
Well, it sounds like some of the things we charge for coaching, a lot of times they were free. So it was good. So you worked with kids for a while now. Is there anything you think that people can learn from kids on how to handle change and barriers? Because you picked them up from really tough parts of the town. So what did you see that the kids did to handle that change? Or when they need help, too. Think about that, too.
Okay. When children need help and they need to handle change, they need to have someone that they feel free to talk to, even if it's not their parents. Like, I have one daughter. She's an adult. She'll be 29 this month. She doesn't always talk to me about everything.
Yeah.
That she's gotten older, we're more... She still knows I'm the mom. But, you know, we can be friends also. Mom and friend, whereas I used to tell her, and just like my mom and dad used to tell me, I'm not your friend, I'm your parent. But people need to, the kids need an outlet. They need someone that they can talk to and confide in and trust. Trust is important. And a lot of the kids that I work with, they still come to me.
Yeah.
Years later. I mean, these are kids from back from 1990, and they're in their mid to late 30s, early 40s. They still come to me for advice or encouragement, motivation, inspiration, if they need a shoulder to cry on, because they still trust me.
That's really interesting the way you describe that, because and what I do, I coach Scrum somewhere up here, there's my logo, which is a way of people working as a team. And there's a position, a role called Scrum Master. In that role, people have to feel comfortable coming to you and trusting you and asking you questions. It's the same role. You're a mentor, you're a teacher, you're a guide. You don't necessarily have to tell them what to do per se, but they sometimes want to explain what their problems are and talk them through. And that's right. One of the things that we do. So what you talk about kids doing, the same thing with Scrum Master, same thing in the business. Sometimes I have some manager friends of mine that say, I spend all day handling issues. so-and-so has said this and so-and-so has that. And they, you know, you just got to learn to talk them down and let it go, right? So that, right. That's really helpful. Okay, so do you have any advice for teams when it comes to handling change or coaching change? So you got a dance crew, and they're your team, right? And they have to go through, they have to get ready for a next level or a change or something like that, or how they handle change. Maybe they didn't win one day, you know. How do you have any advice for teams and people who want to coach groups of people?
Sure. Like I tell the children, even from the smallest 2 or 3 year old, I've always said since the very beginning, you're not going to win everything, but what God has for you is for you. So no one can take that away from you. Let it be a learning lesson and always be ready for whatever. When children that I work with are putting on a dance recital, people don't know the chaos that is going on backstage. There's shoes being thrown, there's ballet shoes that are lost, tights get a hole at the last minute right before it's time for the curtain to open. You've got somebody crying, they want their mommy, all kinds of stuff is going on back there. But the bottom line is, even though they're children, I treat them like professionals. I treat them, I say ladies and gentlemen, because instead of boys and girls, because you get what you expect. And I expect them to behave like professionals. It's costing me money to rent that auditorium. So therefore, they, even though they're not getting paid per se, they're getting the experience.
Right.
And it's the same thing with, you know, it's the same thing with life. There are changes that stuff just happens unexpectedly, but we can't just stop and go, well, I'm going to wait until I'm not sad anymore. Well, you might be sad a little longer than you thought you might be after the loss of a loved one, or you lose a job, or you lose a friend, or your car breaks down and you just paid all your bills. You know, you can't just wait for everything to be perfect, because that's not how life works. You got to keep moving.
Yeah, that's excellent. And, yeah, I don't know how I can add more to it, but I think that was a great way of summarizing how you have to be ready for that and coaching them. Oh, the one thing I did like what you mentioned about, and it applies to the team, you got to treat people like professionals.
Yes.
You know, and if you're going to be a leader or a group or whatever, you can't belittle them. You can't put them down. You say, hey, I have this expectation, same expectation for you. You know, I'm going to treat you like an adult. You know, we all have to be in that field and treat each other as professionals. So I love what you said about treating the young kids as professionals. I do that too. When I actually teach technology at my local school, and I try to have them come up with what they want to do. I don't always need to tell them what we're going to do for class. I'm like, what do you want to do? And I'll lay it out in the future for that. Maybe not that day. They have to understand they're not going to get it that minute, but maybe in a month I'll put that into the curriculum and how I teach them. So now I would be doing a disservice for my audience if I didn't ask you what there's anything that you would like to share or invite them to know about your services, your business, your future endeavors that you got coming down the pike here.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. There's mm-hmm. a lot going on. First, I'll mention I am a sickle cell warrior. That means that I was born with a genetic disorder called sickle cell. I am working with Pfizer Pharmaceutical Company. I'm working with the teams here in North Carolina, and I'm also working with some teams in Massachusetts to have mobile sickle cell units in this area, because oftentimes people who have appointments here in this area, it might take them several months before they can get an appointment with a doctor just to get their labs and blood work checked. And that's very important, having this genetic disorder that causes excruciating pain at any time it wants to, and it affects every organ in the body, the muscles, the bones, everything. People are surprised that I'm still here, along with many others who are older than me, because I'm 55, and I was told I probably wouldn't see my 18th birthday. And then when I was 18, it was 21, and then 21, 30, and then I was like, whatever. I'm gonna live as long as I'm supposed to live. But that's my advice right there.
Yeah. Okay. And I want to say, I kind of wanted to say happy birthday to you for all those birthdays that you got, right? So what that, we talked about it a little bit, but with that being said, please share with us what drives you to achieve what you do. What gives you that energy, even though all these life's obstacles keep coming in your way, and you mentioned part of it today. What do you do? What gets that inner energy out there, like that you have, that you can do all this stuff and, you know, go pick up kids from, you know, pretty dangerous areas of DC area and take them home and do all the things you did, the sacrifices?
Part of it is just being who I am. I've been, like my childhood memoir that will be out soon this year, I ain't never been ordinary. I have done things that other kids, you know, might be outside playing, and I would be sitting there on the sidelines, not always in pain, but sometimes just observing and thinking of what else I wanted to do. I could care less about throwing a ball and playing kickball and all that good stuff. I've always been different from other kids, like a unicorn. Mm-hmm. So my creativity level and imagination has been totally different. But you just have to do what's best for you. Do what's best for you.
Okay. I like
whatever
it.
Whatever works,
do it, right?
Do it.
There you go. And with that, just touch on it. Anything that people can learn to get a hold of you, your new endeavors you got coming in the new future. How can they contact you if they want to connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
They can either contact me on Facebook. It's just Carla Hooker, Carla with a C, H-O-O-K-E-R, just like it sounds, Carla Hooker. Or they can go to my website, which is www.carloskidsdance.org. And that's Carla with a K, with the Carla's Kids Dance. It just, aesthetically, it looked better than with the C. That's the only reason. My real name is spelled with the C, but for my website, it's Carla's Kids Dance with a K.
Okay, and you said you have a memoir coming up?
Yes, I have a memoir coming up. It's called I Ain't Never Been Ordinary. It's about my childhood.
Okay.
It tells, without telling the whole book, it tells how my mom is part of the reason why I'm this way as well. Yes, this is my personality. This is who God created mm-hmm. me to be. And I have a very strong faith, especially after surviving palliative care twice and COVID four times. My mom has been very instrumental in making sure that I was resilient and very confident. She, when my brother and I, and he passed away in 2017. He had sickle cell also.
Okay.
When we would say we were in crises, and no, my mother wasn't abusive. She just, you know, ruled with an iron fist. And we would say, we're hurting. We can't go to school today. And we would really be hurting. We wouldn't be faking.
Yeah.
She would say, and if both of us said it at the same time, then she thought we were faking.
But there you go.
It just happened. She thought I put my brother up to it if we both said we were hurting. And she said, well, you're going to go to school. Go drink some water. And people who have sickle cell understand that joke because we drink water all the time. I've got water sitting right here.
There you go.
Beside me, I'm always drinking water. But she would say, go drink some water because you're going to school, because guess what? I got to go to work. And she went to work.
Yeah.
You know, if we weren't feeling well at school, we knew to go tell the nurse. But the minute the nurse would pick up the phone and say, I'm calling your mother,
we're fine. We'll go back to school.
Yeah. I'm going back to class. And she could see that we were physically in pain. Yeah. But my brother and I would say, can we just rest a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, because don't call my mother. And she did call her one time, but I won't tell you that story because it's in the
book. Okay. Yeah. Oh, don't forget, show your book.
Oh.
So this is my version of the book. I just came today. So show your version of the book. There you go. Carla's on there with the change. So,
yes.
So they can reach out to you if they want your copy of your book, too. or me, or there's a generic version that's coming out on Amazon too that Jim and Jim put out. So that's cool. And I want to go ahead.
I didn't show the back without.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We got Jim and Jim. Yeah. Inspired us there.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing some of your story, and hopefully people get an idea of when we do encounter change, there's ways to get around it and learn lessons from people like you, and share some of those lessons. I like treating people like professionals as we move through our journeys and stuff. And I think that whether no matter how old they are, you know, right now I'm at an age where people that are grown adults could be my kids that I work with. And I don't call them kids, but theoretically I could if I really wanted to, but I won't do that. So, but I want to thank you and look forward to hearing more about your memoirs and your ventures in the future.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I enjoyed myself. I got to learn a little bit more about my colleague.
There you go.
This is exciting.
Well, thanks. And we're good.